It's been awesome. I love being a Blackhawk. A lot of these games feel like a home game, and even on the road, and I think every day is a blessing when you're a Blackhawk.
Ryan Donato.
Tyler Johnson to Donato over the shark line to Radish. Pumps one on goal. They score! Following up, it's Ryan Donato with a hustling play.
In a 4-0 game, you just need to get one, and you start to feel better about yourself, and you get two, and then you know you're back in the game. So I think for us, it was a tough start, but I like the way we managed it after.
Now, it's time to talk hockey.
Go Blackhawks!
It's time to talk Hawks. Here's Joe Brand.
A complete turnaround for the Blackhawks on Saturday. After coughing up 4 goals to the San Jose Sharks, the Hawks grab the next 5. They win in overtime. They salvage a victory on the road trip. And they sweep the season series against the San Jose Sharks. Now, all but 11 games left on the regular season. What's left in store for this Blackhawks team? Well, we'll dive into that and a few other things, and a very heated practice and heated message from the Blackhawks head coach during Saturday's game. I'm Joe Brand. This is Blackhawks Live. Our producer is Jack Heinrich. Our guest this week is Ryan Donato. He'll join us after the 7:30 news. Donato helped kickstart that comeback on Saturday with one of the goals that you just heard in the open made by our own Ernie Skatten. Just doing what he's done all year long, hard-working effort, getting to the front of the net, and finding a juicy rebound off Taylor Radish's shot that went off the pads of the San Jose goaltender, Devin Cooley, who, man, have the Hawks been spoiling his entry into the NHL. If you haven't heard, Devin Cooley grew up a San Jose Sharks fan in that area, Los Gatos. He made his NHL debut against the Hawks at the United Center last week. He had a 2-goal lead, coughed it up as the Hawks won 5-2 in that game with 5 unanswered goals. And then Saturday night, his team gave him a 4-0 lead in just his second career NHL game, his home debut at the SAP Center, and he coughed up 5 unanswered goals. Kind of some disheartening words from him after that game, just explaining how frustrated he was with the outcome and took full responsibility and full blame, too, for that loss. But you do have to give the Hawks credit for fighting back in that one, just like you got to make them accountable for the first 4 goals that they allowed. Today at practice, it's a pretty normal practice. Hawks got back into town yesterday. They actually finished the game on Saturday in San Jose, spent the night in California, flew back on Sunday. I think they wanted to just make sure that the team got a good night's sleep rather than traveling across the country in the wee hours of the morning. But anyway, they did their typical practice today, and afterwards did a bag skate. If you don't know what that is, it's like running ladders on a basketball court. You're just gunning it back and forth and left and right, and typically it's used as a punitive measure to kind of right the wrong for what your team did or didn't do. And Luke Richardson knows that his team came back and won on Saturday, but still felt like a bag skate for today's practice was necessary.
A little bit of a grab their attention, and we skipped out of the game, luckily, on top. But that's great on them that they were able to do that. But, you know, if we go back 2 games, we really weren't happy with our performance in 2 games. And that's just not professional enough for me. So you have to do it every day. And sometimes that's the way the game is played, up and down the ice or over and back. So it just, you know, sets home that it's, you know, really unacceptable, really for the standard that we want to have for work ethic. So we worked in practice today.
I've been a very big fan of Luke Richardson since he got the job as head coach of the Blackhawks, and I still am. But I feel like the only thing you can maybe criticize is why this team isn't always ready out of the gate this year. For whatever reason, that really didn't seem to be a problem last year. This year, there's been a lot more inconsistencies with the starts and just kind of inconsistencies with games. It's almost like the Hawks give it their all for half the game or the beginning of the game or the end of the game. But I don't know how much blame you could put that on the head coach or the coaching staff overall, because this team is relying on so many young players. I brought that up to Troy Murray at the pregame show last game, actually in the first intermission when the team had a pretty horrible start against the only team worse than them in the standings in San Jose. And Troy kind of waboshed my argument, saying, I don't buy that. You can't allow a youthful group to not come out with a bunch of energy. That should be their MO. That should be the thing they bring to the table. So I think Luke ordering a bag skate at the end of practice is an attempt to just kind of really drill it into their heads that a 60-minute effort is needed each and every game. Doesn't matter who we're playing, because we kind of need to bring it each and every game. And I asked Luke last week, what's the difficulty? What's the challenge for just having consistent, solid starts? And he couldn't quite put his finger on it, because it's not like there's a reoccurring method of, oh, there was a morning skate this day, but not this day. Or the team practiced the day before and not this day. It's kind of a random thing. Now, hopefully, moving forward, that won't be the case. And I'd like to think it won't, because, again, this wasn't an issue last year. And the differences are the two rosters. A lot more youth on this side. A lot of kind of hardworking guys last year that were trying to show their worth, their value in the NHL. This year, you got a lot of rookies that you're relying on that know they have a place in this organization. And that's not to kind of poo-poo their work ethic. I just think it's a world of change for guys like Kevin Korchinski, Connor Bedard, Alex Vlasic even. But it's also not those guys in particular that are slowing down. It is a lot of the team. But the good news is, this team turned around on Saturday. They showed themselves they were capable of coming back and winning a game. And you got to give credit to Luke Richardson for maybe lighting a fire underneath the team. Not even in the first intermission, Luke Richardson felt the need to light a fire a little bit earlier than that when things were going downhill 2-0.
I didn't wait till after the first, actually. I waited for a timeout, and I called them in close because I didn't want to waste a timeout that early in the game, and I don't like doing that. It just got to the point where, and it didn't get much better right away. But, you know, it might take time to settle in, but, you know, I don't know. I didn't really want to wait till the end of the first because it could trickle and get worse. And, you know, you're right. I don't think you can do that too often. I think it just falls on deaf ears after a while. And I think what you need to do is, you know, make them realize that this is up to them to be ready. And you know, I mean, we need to be ready and give them a good game plan that they can succeed at, which we think it is. We're always up for discussion with them about certain parts of our systems and what we do, and questions on gray areas and how to fix them, and maybe even a little change. It's them playing the game. They're the ones that see it on the ice. So we take that into consideration, but when we feel like we've done our job and prepared them and we're doing the exact opposite of what our pregame message was and our video of the other team was, you know, it's unprofessional and it's unacceptable. So, you know, I let them know that in the best way, fashion of urgency that I thought was needed at the time. And then I tried to back off and say not too much at all. Even sometimes it's hard. I want to kind of talk through a shift so other people can see what's going on the ice and get the message. But I just try to back off and let the assistants talk and do some stuff for the rest of the period, and then I didn't go in between periods. I didn't feel like, why would I double up on the message and then sound contradictory or repetitive?
Ryan Donato said that the message was a little bit scary because he said Luke is such an easygoing, lighthearted, nice guy. So it was a little scary to see him flip a switch like he did. But did you take into account how strategic he was with it? Not just when he felt the need to deliver the message, but to not do it too much or do it again. Because he's right. If he exploded in the middle of that first period, the Hawks finished that period down 2-0, maybe tweaking their game a little bit towards the end, but still by no means acceptable. And then out of the gate in the second period, it was not good. It was ugly. Turnovers. Same type of lackadaisical start. And I always found that kind of interesting. When you're a head coach, you know, I remember a baseball manager once saying that I can't just explode the first time I'm upset with something, because what happens if we lose again? Then what's left to do? And that's the kind of sense I got from Luke, where He said what he needed to say in the first period. And then there was no point to double down on it afterwards because clearly the message wasn't going to be put across as immediately, as valuable. But in his words, you kind of let those words and messages linger, settle in, and then they do take over in the second period, and then eventually the third as well. And listen, I know that the Hawks picked up this win against the San Jose Sharks, again, the only team below the Hawks in the standings. But these are the types of games, these are the types of attributes that we want to see this team start to generate, regardless of how much turnover the roster is going to have next year. This was a very valuable win for this team. You instill a little bit of confidence, even being down by four, and you're able to work your way back. I think one of the best messages that Luke had to say was, after the first two periods, his message was, we don't need to win this game in 5 minutes. We're down by two. We've got 20 minutes to work with, and then eventually more than 20 minutes because the game went to overtime. But we can gradually win this game back. And they did, which is a good example of what this team is capable of when they put together the right recipe. Their next game will be against Calgary, a team they have played better in the past, but Calgary, despite probably not making to the playoffs, still clinging on to their postseason hopes. We'll see how they do. We'll see how Lucas Reichel does, too, because he actually had some pretty good numbers over the past few years against Calgary. We'll talk about Lucas Reichel, Landon Slaggart, and Wyatt Kaiser when we come back. Again, Ryan Donato joins us after the 7:30 news, but you're listening to Blackhawks Live, 720 WGN. The Blackhawks come back home tomorrow night. They host the Calgary Flames, and then they're right back on the road. So 6 of 7 for the Hawks away from the United Center. They host Calgary on Tuesday at the UC, and then it's off to Ottawa, Philly, and the New York Islanders. I'm Joe Brand. This is Blackhawks Live. Our producer is Jack Heinrich. You know, before we get into Lucas Reichel, Landon Slaggart, and Wyatt Kaiser, it's time for Cue the Shot, which is brought to you by Curveball Whiskey.
High slot, now Jones rolls in, fires, he scores! Hawks win it overtime! Seth Jones with a shot from the slot! Beats the goaltender Cooley. It's his second goal of the night, and the Blackhawks end this road trip in style. A come-from-behind overtime victory over the Sharks. It took them 18 seconds of overtime. Jones firing it past the goaltender Cooley, and the Blackhawks prevail.
Cue the Shot is brought to you by Curveball, the original barbecue whiskey. Join the Bonehead Nation today at curveballwhiskey.com. Try it with a little pickle and maybe some pickle juice for a pickleback shot. It's good stuff. Lucas Reichel, first off, Seth Jones getting the overtime game winner, completing the 5-goal comeback. Good for Seth Jones, too, finishing it off with a goal. He had a couple of big mistakes in that game, and ones that he was very accountable for. He chatted with the media after the game and brought up specific plays in both the first period and in the second period that his actions kind of directly led to goals, and had no problem whatsoever sticking his hand up and saying, I shouldn't have done that. This was my fault here. This was my fault there. And he ended up coming away with a very big game. Thought Lucas Reichel had a very good game, showing an aggressive drive, just more confidence, handling the puck, just diving into San Jose's zone. You're starting to see him play to his MO a little bit better. And also away from the puck, too, which are two things that the Hawks have definitely wanted to see him do. Unfortunately, it hasn't really translated onto the score sheet, but his overall game has definitely taken a step forward since before he was down in Rockford. Which brings us to tomorrow's game. Lucas Reichel's got pretty good numbers against Calgary. 4 assists, 1 goal in 5 games. That leads, for opponents that he's faced throughout his career, he doesn't even have 4 points against one sole team. So maybe tomorrow, Lucas Reichel can continue in on some of that action against the Calgary Flames. Actually, his first career NHL goal was against Calgary at the United Center. So hopefully that can roll over. I've still really liked Landon Slaggart's game, too. Both he and Wyatt Kaiser, when Slaggart made his NHL debut and Kaiser came back, the recent going this time, Luke Richardson basically said he wanted to see the same thing from both of them. He didn't say this at the same time, but he didn't want to see them try to do too much. Just kind of stick to their roles, do what they need to do. And Landon Slaggart's a guy that likes to get to the front of the net. Pretty soon he's going to pick up a goal from either a rebound or a tip-in. And it's nice to see him have that aggression and that confidence early on. Because like Luke said, his fourth year in college, the puck kind of comes to you a little bit more casually, more naturally, easier. And you're able to take the puck a little bit easier. That's a world of a difference once you get to the NHL, but it seems like Landon Slaggart has adjusted well so far. And Wyatt Kaiser's game continues to just show his hockey IQ. He's not the biggest guy out there, but he's going to try to find a way to get the puck, or at least be a nuisance to the other team. And this is a guy that has just kept earning his way up to the NHL roster. I'd imagine next year it might be a little bit more consistent for him. Hopefully it does, as he'll probably get rewarded for his solid play. We talk with Ryan Donato after the news with Steve Ruxton for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Back to Blackhawks Live here on 720 WGN. We're talking with Blackhawks forward Ryan Donato. And Ryan, you kind of kick-started the comeback in the last game. But overall, how much was that win needed for this team right now?
It's huge. I mean, obviously it wasn't the way we wanted to start. We had a couple games like that, and you know, it was nice to see that we had some pushback. We know we can, you know, even if we're down and out in a game, as much as it is 4-0, we can come back, and you know, I think it was a sign of good things to come. Hopefully,
sounds like Luke kind of let you guys up pretty good too, huh?
Yeah, you know, he's obviously a great coach and a great guy and a great person to have in the locker room and lead. But you know, I mean, he can definitely get us straightened when he needs to, and I think he did that, and you know, it worked out for us the last game.
What does it say about this team, though? After being down 2-0, after hearing from your head coach, falling behind quickly 4-0, and still being able to have that kind of mentality that, hey, we're still in this.
It just shows that we're confident. I mean, to be honest with you, we played against them last time, and we were down 2-0, right, and we came back. So for us, we knew that, you know, there's always a chance. And, you know, once you get one or two, you start to feel more confident. And, you know, sometimes it's too late. When you get that one or two, it's late in the third, and, you know, there's not much of a chance. But, you know, we did it early enough where we got it to 3, and then we got it to 2, and you know, there's still some time left, and we were like, you know what, we can do this. If you think about it, it's only 2-0, and we've done that before. So for us, we were confident that we could, and you know, our big players stepped up, and we had a lot of leaders and did the right thing and made sure the younger guys were falling behind us, and you know, it was a good game, and we're happy to come back from that.
What have you liked most about your game, especially lately?
I'm not sure. I mean, I just try to prepare and play the same way every game. You know, I always accustom it to when good things happen that I go to church and, you know, my prayers are being heard. But for me, I try and prepare and do the same thing every game. And, you know, regardless if it goes well or if it doesn't go well, trying to keep the right mindset, stay positive. And, you know, if it's going good, not to get too high. And if it's going bad, not to get too low. So for me, I know at the beginning, if I was a young kid, it wouldn't be as easy as said as done. But for me now, I've learned those lessons. And, you know, that's the way I kind of handle things now.
Want to give any shout-outs to any Chicago churches that you're...
I usually go to the DePaul University Church, which is right across the street from me where I live in Lincoln Park. So, yeah. Yeah.
How much you like in Chicago?
Love Chicago. Yeah. I love Chicago. A lot of good food here, which just makes me happy. Yeah.
Anything else surprise you about living in Chicago?
It's very similar to Boston, to be honest with you, a place where I grew up. You know, it's very sports-oriented city, gritty city, and, you know, it's a little bit different in terms of how big it is and spread out, but the terms of restaurants and being on the water and that kind of stuff, it's definitely got that feel, so it definitely feels like home.
Any good food spots you want to give a shout-out to?
Oh, boy. Where do I start? I think Bavette's is my favorite spot. Armitage Jailhouse is up there, too, yeah.
I'll never forget when you were talking about growing up in the Boston area playing hockey and just how accessible ice rinks are and skating on the pond and everything. I mean, how much do you feel like that was? I know your dad is a huge influence on you, but how much was just that lifestyle played a role in your career and where it's gotten to you now?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, you know, there's kids that love the game but don't have that much access to it. For me, I was always around the rink with my dad, regardless if he was playing or coaching. I always had access to you know, trying to get ice or trying to get guys to play with, right? Like, you, if you have a good group of buddies that can skate and can, some one guy can get ice somewhere, or you can play street hockey or mini hockey, whatever it is, you're always doing something hockey oriented. And and in saying that, I also played other sports as a kid, which I think is definitely a good thing too. But for me, being able to have that access to the ice and following a passion has definitely helped me be able to get to where I am today.
What else did you play?
Played baseball, golf, tennis, lacrosse, a little bit of football too. So, yeah.
What do you miss the most?
I mean, my favorite sport now is golf, yeah, other than hockey. But I mean, baseball was always so much fun. You know, I mean, it's a little bit different energy-wise than hockey, yeah, yeah. But you know, we had such a good team when I was there, and you know, I wasn't playing as much as I probably would have liked, but to be a part of that team was pretty special. Back in high school, we had about 9 Division I players, and wow, a couple of times we played against draft picks and that kind of stuff. So for me, you know, I wasn't meant for that life, but to be able to see it and firsthand and experience it a little bit was definitely cool.
What position were you?
Second base.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I can kind of see the resemblance.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
the short spurts where you gotta act quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
When Anthony Bovilia came here, I asked somebody from the Islanders organization, like, what do you got on him? Give me a scouting report. And they said, he's exactly the kind of player that you would expect being a coach's son. Like, hardworking, always there, always understands the role. Do you kind of embrace that at all, or do you not try to think about something like that?
I mean, I think having a father as a coach definitely made me more coachable, you know. But I think my dad did such a good job at being a coach at the rink and a father at home, you know. I think that's a tough balance. But for me, I mean, he was tough on me in the right moments and definitely lighthearted when he needed to be as well. So I think for me, you know, I also had my uncle as a coach in high school. So I had that family feel. And, you know, sometimes you think having family makes it easier, but, you know, sometimes family makes it harder because they're not afraid to tell you how they truly feel or give you the hard message. And, you know, I think sometimes they were able to do that, but they also know what to say, the right things to say to kind of pick me up too if I'm feeling down. And, you know, usually you weren't feeling that much that way when you're in college and high school because, you know, you're trying to get to the next level. But they always found seemed to say the right things at the right time, and definitely, hopefully, made me more coachable for the future for me too.
Did that take a little bit to understand the right way to absorb constructive criticism?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my dad was always by my side regardless if it was high school hockey or squirts or whatever it is. He's always giving me little tips. At the beginning, it was definitely more friendly advice, and then as I got older, it was more serious stuff. And you know, they only do it because they care, right? And you know, you can have a lot of coaches care, but to have a father care, it's a little bit different. And you know, he didn't bring it home too much, but you know, the messages that he needed to get across to me were always sent. And you know, even if they were hard messages, and yeah, I definitely think I would be definitely different if I didn't have him supporting me every day.
Would you say you're one of those guys now that like needs constructive criticism rather than just compliments?
Yeah, no, I definitely like to hear the difficult messages, right? I think every player would like to kind of kid themselves every day if something wasn't going well and pretend like it's not happening. But, you know, I've been around it so long now that, you know, sometimes those hard messages I'm open to hearing because, you know, if it's something that I can fix, then it's something I can work on. And, you know, that's the way it is. I'd rather know ahead of time so I can fix it or get better at something, and you know, even if it's a hard message.
Do you feel like spending all those years and time being coached by so many different people that are so close to you has helped you a lot this year with all the young players on this team?
Yeah, no, I think one of the things, I mean, having a dad as a coach is special, but I think in terms of just having that experience where you're going to different teams and you're in and out of the lineup or whatever it is, you're playing on good teams and bad teams, it's definitely kind of made me realize that every season's a roller coaster. You know, you can have a lot of emotions that you're high, super high when things are going well, and then not so great when they're going poorly. So for me, I had to learn how to stay even keel and not get too high and not get too low. And I think that's one of the biggest messages I have for the young guys is just, you know, everything is great and good and you could be happy, but don't get too high when things are going well. Stay hungry when you can. And then if things are going poorly, you know, things can get better, and stay positive about it and still be hungry to get better.
Are you one of the more vocal guys with some of the younger players?
No, I mean, I think I try to be when I can be. If they come to me for advice, I usually try to be. But, you know, as a young guy, I would look to older guys and ask for advice. And that's the kind of role I play. I think if guys need advice and they can feel comfortable come to me, then I'll be more than happy to give them that advice. But I think, you know, it's a my dad always told me it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? So I think it takes some time to get those messages across. And if any of these young guys ever have questions for me, they know I'm always open to helping them out.
Finishing things up with Brian Donato here on Blackhawks Live. What do you like to do for fun? What do you like to do away from the rink?
During the summer or during the season?
Yeah, both.
I think during the summer I'm a big golfer, big fisherman. I like to golf and fish as much as I can. During the season, there's not much I can do that's going to be like that, but I take the dog to the park as much as I can, go for walks, get to explore the city, go to eat in different restaurants, and that's basically it during the season. But during the summer, I like to golf, fish, go out in the boat as much as I can.
Saltwater fish, freshwater, yeah, oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like you probably picked up a lot of that living out northeast.
Yeah, no, I think we definitely went a bunch. I was fishing on the docks or off the beach a lot when I was a kid, and then as I got older, some friends had boats, and that was when fishing got pretty serious. You know, you can catch a lot more. And then once I joined the Freedom Boat Club or whatever it's called, and I could basically take a boat out during the summer whenever I want, and that kind of change the way I fish. I get to get out there, even if it's just going for cruise or going fishing. It's something I like to do during the summer.
I'm sure you know your way around a boat then, huh?
I mean, I would like to pretend that, but I mean, I can catch some fish, but only in that one specific area. Yeah.
Best prize fish.
That's a good question. Me and one of my buddies and I, my dad, and his name's Marty McGinnis. Luke McGinnis is his kid, the kid that I wouldn't finish, but Marty McGinnis is his father, played in the NHL for a bit, and then my dad, myself, and our friend Kevin Barbary, my dad's friend, and we went out fishing. We caught like a 350, 400-pound tuna, which was pretty cool. And then I think last summer, or last All-Star break, we caught a swordfish and you know, a couple tunas and stuff like that too, so...
Ryan, thanks for doing this. Best of luck.
Of course, thank you. Appreciate it.
We'll have more Blackhawks Live 720 WGN.
Putting the finishing touches on Blackhawks Live. Again, the Hawks' next game tomorrow night at the United Center, hosting the Calgary Flames. I'm Joe Brand, our producer. Sorry about that, Jack. Jack Heinrich is here. Actually, Jack, before you go ahead and jump into this last segment, how was doing pre-post?
It was a lot of fun. You make it look a lot easier than it is, but... I mean, yeah, it was fun. We got to chat on air, and I mean, it wasn't the best game to get thrown into, but it was still a lot of fun regardless. Staying up late, talking hockey.
I was going to say, late night show. You're okay with that?
Oh, yeah. I think I'm built for it.
Well, you better be. We'll working in the radio world.
Yeah, we'll see what other people think, but I think I am.
What do you got for us?
Keeping along a little bit of a Hawks theme here, I thought this is from Ben Pope of the Chicago Sun-Times. In that game against the Sharks, I think it just kind of just shows how wacky this game was. Fabian Zetterlund had 3 points, but he was a -4 in that game.
Saw that.
And that was just the third time in the NHL it's happened since 2001. Leon Draisaitl did it, and Clark MacArthur did it in 2010. I mean, I think that just showed kind of how that game turned so quick.
It's also weird that that's only the third time since 01, because the game is... generated so much offense lately that seems to be the only case where it could be. I mean, where you score 3 goals, yet you're still a -4. Yeah, that's a wild day on the stat sheet for Zetterlund.
Yeah,
rough one.
Yeah, I mean, you could say what you want about plus minus. I don't think it always tells the full story.
True.
Because I think that one game, I mean, Kevin Korchinski scored a goal, but he's a -4, but he had a lot of ups and downs in that game, and we've talked about how good Filip Kurashev's been, and but his plus-minus is really bad. Do you think he wouldn't be a good defender? But...
Well, yeah, and I mean, even just all the Hawks this year in general, with the rough year that they're having. I mean, that's the one argument that people want to bring up for Connor Bedard not deserving the Calder Trophy, but that's just silly.
Yeah, I think it's useful for some things, but I think you can overlook it. But I just thought that was interesting since it hadn't happened that much. This was something I was talking about when I filled in for you, is Sean Couturier's healthy scratches for the Flyers. He's the captain for the Flyers, and John Tortorella, we know, is interesting ways of coaching, but he healthy scratched him twice, and then he returned over the weekend, and they won against the Bruins, but I was reading up on it, and they still don't really know why he did that, and he didn't really give a reason. He won't really talk about it when they ask him, Tortorella. So, like, he just kind of was like, yeah, he was good tonight, and then he just, like, looked down for something else. So, weird situation, but they have gone on a little bit of a run, and the Flyers are, like, in the thick of that wild card. Like, they're just hanging on to it in the East, so... I think they're trying to send a message, and they're playing a little better, but it's just a wacky situation.
Yeah, but I mean, that's always going to be John Tortorella's
right
situation, though. It's always going to be a little weird, a little... you're not going to hear a ton if he doesn't want to talk about it.
And right.
That's clearly the case. The one thing I will say, though, is he's always got his players' backs. He's always there to defend them. So maybe if it comes to something, you know, down towards the end of the year... I wouldn't be surprised if he has like a ton of great things to say about the captain or not, but I saw that, and John Tortorella is going to do what John Tortorella wants to do,
right?
And the buck stops with him, so it doesn't surprise me that he's kind of gone a little with a bold route.
Yeah, that's definitely on par for him. So that's something interesting to follow. I mean, they are playing better. And then a fun one, Jaromir Jagr, he was supposed to have those bobbleheads given away.
Yes.
They found them today.
Really?
Yes.
I missed this.
Yeah. This it just said at 4:40 today, there's like an article about it on NHL.com.
Real quick, if people haven't heard, there was supposed to be a Jaromir Jagr bobblehead giveaway, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, for his number retirement.
And the truckload that had them all got stolen. And they didn't know where they were. And, I mean, it was just a wild situation. Who steals 10,000 bobbleheads and for what for? So I'm sorry. Continue on with the rest of the story.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what they're saying. But they announced today on their website that they were notified that they found it, I guess, and they negotiated the return of the stolen property.
Really?
Yeah. So they got it back.
Negotiated. Wow.
So it was in Ontario, California, I guess.
I'll trade you 5,000 Wayne Gretzky's and 20,000 Gordie Howe's for the...
Yeah. Like, how's the negotiation for bobbleheads even go?
Well, and that's what we joked about, was that someone either knew exactly what they were stealing or had no clue
right.
what they were stealing.
There's no in between.
Right.
So I guess it was in a warehouse in Ontario, California, and then it arrived in Pittsburgh today, and they announced it on social media. They said the case is closed. They found it. There's vouchers, and you can get them on April 6th or 7th. And then they wrap it up saying, finally, our long national nightmare's over.
You know,
and they found them.
It's been such a rough year for Pittsburgh, and they actually coughed up a 4-goal lead on Sunday, too. So the Sharks aren't the only team, but obviously Pittsburgh in a different situation, probably not going to make the playoffs again. And I think they should have just had a ball with this whole thing. I think they kind of have.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a video of Jagr like putting on sunglasses and strapping in a bobblehead in his... passenger seat saying, don't worry, buddy, we're going to go get your friends. But I think they should have had a semi-truck replica giveaway, do a whole new bobblehead order, and then that would raise the value of those other bobbleheads.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because they were the stolen ones. I think they could add a lot of extra fun with it, but hey, I'm glad they found them.
Yeah, good. They'd be good marketing. But yeah, they found them, and they can get them next week, I guess. So they negotiated well.
Fun stuff. Thank you, Jack.
Yep, thank you.
Once again, Hawks host Calgary tomorrow. They hit the road after that. Ottawa, Philly, and the New York Islanders before the final month of the regular season. Just 11 games left. I think 5 home games left at the United Center. So only a few more chances to see Connor Bedard and the Hawks at the UC. Big thanks to Jack Heinrich, Ryan Donato, and the Blackhawks. We'll talk to you tomorrow night when the Hawks host the Flames.